When I found out I was going to be a parent, I immediately felt a lot of anxiety and worry. So I went on to BetterHelp to try to look for a therapist to help me with that.
My relationship with my family and with my boyfriend and with myself were suffering. I really needed help.
I was ruminating a lot. Really getting those thoughts out to a therapist and getting feedback was just life-changing.
If you're thinking of giving therapy a try, visit BetterHelp.com/stuff today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/stuff.
Credit scores, down payments, interest rates. Car buying can be a numbers game, but you don't have to be a math expert to get the keys to your dream car. Just use Kelly Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. Crunch your numbers and get personalized results so you know exactly how much you'll pay each month for your car. It's like having a magic wand for your wallet. Presto! The car you've been wanting is now within reach. So hit the road and leave your calculator at home. Auto Trader.
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh, and there's Chuck, and this is Stuff You Should Know. One of our, really, it's been a while, top 10 editions where we don't actually do top 10.
Yeah. Some people out there are like, what in the world are you talking about?
Yeah.
And some people are like, oh my gosh, this reminds me of the old days back in the 2000, oh, I don't know, 10s,
yeah.
8s, 9, 13s?
Sure. Oh yeah, 13 was lousy with top 10s, I think.
Yeah, we used to do top 10s from the old How Stuff Works website, and it seems like they never had 10 great entries.
Right.
So we would just on the fly say, oh, let's not do this one. But we're better now. We're professionals.
Yeah.
So we got together beforehand and said, well, let's just do these 8.
And yeah, it feels weird to know ahead of time what we're not going to do rather than just saying it in the middle of recording. But I do feel like it is more professional.
It's called growth, my friend.
So we are not doing all 10, but there is one that I think really kind of introduces this concept out of the gate, Chuck.
And it's what concept?
Oh, yeah. I forgot to talk about the concept. We're talking today about bad business decisions. And yeah, you could call this the Schadenfreude hour. Because if you are kind of, if you take a grim view of CEOs and captains of industry and all that, this is like a chance to really kind of poke fun at people who've made some really terrible decisions over the years.
Not all great decisions over the years. Sometimes they're bad, and we're here to talk about 8 of them.
But hey, the games you never won are the ones you didn't start playing in? What's that saying? Is that it?
I don't know if that's it, but that totally makes sense to me. So I'm saying yes.
Okay, good.
So you only miss the shots you don't take?
Yeah, that's much better than mine.
But I like yours.
I undermined our professional spiel at the beginning just now.
Right.
So there's a pretty well-worn story about how Alexander Graham Bell invented the telephone and went to Western Union and said, hey, you captains of communication, you guys rule the world as far as long-distance communication goes. I've got this neat invention. Why don't you buy it from me for $100,000? And the heads at Western Union said, that is ridiculous. Nobody's going to want this thing. Hit the bricks. And Alexander Graham Bell just went off and created his own phone company. And those patents that he received turned out to be what are widely considered the most valuable patents ever issued in the United States. And some pretty valuable patents have been issued. Like, this is nothing to sneeze. We're not talking about some also-ran patent. This is the patent of patents, right?
It beat out the Squatty Potty.
Oh, by far. Like, by twice as valuable even, maybe.
But probably more so.
But it just kind of goes to show you, like, it's easy to say ha-ha at Western Union. But it also is a teachable moment, as Oprah would say, because if you dig into the story, you find that when Alexander Graham Bell invented the telephone, he didn't invent the telephone so you and I could pick up a receiver and talk to one another on either end. He basically invented it to be the radio before radio. The intent was for you to sit in a room and somebody on the other end of the telephone line in a different city perform a play or read a monologue or play a symphony, and you were going to sit there and listen. You weren't supposed to talk back. that was the idea. So if you put it in that context, Western Union doesn't seem so dumb anyway. So I think it's a reminder to keep in mind, in most of these cases, hindsight is 20/20, and that there is a lot of exacerbating circumstances and that nothing's ever that one-sided, but it's still kind of fun to think about.
Yeah. And you know what? A great example of that hindsight being 20/20 is, I'm going to go with this one, is when Excite did not buy Google.
You just called an audible.
Everybody remembers Excite, or you may not, but if you if it sounds familiar and you look up the Excite logo, you will immediately probably, if you were of a certain age, go, oh, yeah, I remember Excite. They didn't really stand out to me when I was researching this until I went and saw it. Then I was like, oh, yeah, I remember those guys. I did not ever use it. But excite.com, believe it or not, is still around. Mm-hmm. And in one of what will be two bits of serendipity with this episode releasing now,
yeah,
Excite is literally ending their email program this month.
I know. That's what prompted this episode.
Is it really?
No.
Oh.
I had no idea.
Well, because what's funny is I made fun of Emily up until, about a year ago because she still paid for a Mindspring email.
No.
Yes, because she's like, I've had this email for 20 years and like everybody's got it. And I can't like, she was locked in, she felt like, but she weeded it out eventually because I think they may have stopped supporting it as well. I'm not sure.
Oh, there you go. But they still kept taking her money, right?
Maybe. I don't know. Anyway, Excite, if you go to excite.com today, you will laugh because you will see what is a very old school looking internet site. It's like a list of, it's a news scroll, like a list of headlines. Mm-hmm. It's got these little icons that I assume they pay to be on there because it's like Amazon, eBay, State Farm, Casper Mattress, like prominent icons as if this website is the place to go to get to those other places.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the left rail, you will see a list of things like email, which, of course, is going defunct, a bunch of redirects like weather goes to AccuWeather, sports goes to ESPN, and then entertainment, travel, finance, and games all goes to ask.com.
Wow. Yeah, apparently, Excite was...
That's today.
I thought Excite turned into ask.com, but apparently they're separate.
Oh, okay. Well, they clearly like each other because they link... four different things to ask.com.
And do you know, of course, ask.com started out as Ask Jeeves. Remember that?
I thought it was. I just couldn't remember for sure.
So these are search engines. Some of them were. Yahoo apparently categorized the entire internet by category, strangely enough. But Excite supposedly was a search engine. It just wasn't super good. And there's a story out there, Chuck, that the search engine was purposefully not super good because these search engines used to be called web portals. That was, you would go to Excite first, search for what you were searching for, and then hopefully while you were there, take in a bunch of ads. So the longer you stayed on Excite before leaving and going off into the internet, the better it was for Excite's bottom line. So their search wasn't that great. And that is an explanation from one of the people who was part of this deal for why Excite passed on Google.
Yeah, and they weren't just a search engine. They're like what they are today still. They were an aggregator. They had news scrolls and stuff like that. It was almost like a front page of a newspaper that you would go to.
Right. But a really like super lo-fi newspaper.
Yeah. So Google comes around. This is 1999. Larry Page and Sergey Brin said, all right, we got this thing. It's basically like an algorithm, essentially, at this point. And we could sell it to you, Excite, for $1 million. And then they balked and they said, all right, how about $750,000? And they said, no, we're Excite. Why do we need you, this weird search engine that isn't even really a search engine yet? And I think this is one clear example of hindsight being 20/20, because no one could have predicted what Google would become.
Absolutely not. And so the CEO of Excite, George Bell, is known as the guy who passed up on buying Google for less than $1 million, right? But he's like, hey, I'm not some dummy. Like, these guys wanted to gut Excite search engine and put in the Google search algorithm instead. And I was dedicated to my engineering team. They had worked really hard to create the search engine that I thought was perfectly fine. And I wasn't about to completely poison our culture for Google. And Google's people said, no, actually what happened was we had a bake-off between their search engine and our search engine, and their stuff came back with terrible stuff. Our stuff came back with really good stuff. And they were like, this is too good. People are going to immediately leave Excite, so we don't want your algorithm. Those are the two competing stories for why this didn't happen.
Amazing.
It is amazing. Bad business decisions still, though? Sure. Absolutely.
All right. Where should we go next? We might not even get to 8, everybody. That's how exciting these episodes are. I'm going to go with Kodak.
I was going to go with Kodak, too.
Everyone that grew up in the pre-digital revolution remembers Kodak as the photograph company, the film paper company, the film stock company, founded in 1880 out of New York. They controlled 90% of the film market into the late 70s and about 85% of the camera market and employed about 60,000 people. And in the mid-70s, there was a engineer there named Steve Sasson who basically figured out digital photography. He was experimenting with something called a charge couple device, a CCD, and he figured out how to translate an image into ones and zeros and built the very first digital camera. It was a 100,000 pixel image, which is pretty cute. It's 0.01 megapixels.
It's a little grainy.
And went to the bosses and said, hey, like, this is the future, guys. This is what we should do. And Kodak said, oh, well, I'm not so sure about that.
So, yes, there were some people in Kodak that were like, this is dangerous, man. We're like, our money is in print photographs. Our money is in regular cameras. And there was another group in Kodak that was like, this guy's right. Steve Sasson's right. This is the future. And they did invest billions of dollars in developing a digital camera, whole outfit. And those conservative forces managed to keep it back. And then finally, by the time Kodak joined the digital camera revolution, they had been passed by. So not only did they miss the digital camera revolution despite having invented it, they also wasted billions of dollars on their digital camera division that never got to really get a good start. So it was just a complete waste. Like, this is a genuinely bad business decision, Chuck.
Yeah, but they had the disc camera. Remember those?
Yes.
That was the big Kodak product that was, it wasn't digital, but it was a little film wheel. It was a disc, and it was a little flat camera. I remember that was all the rage.
Oh,
all the kids
yeah.
wanted them. It was a very big deal.
I see that now. Yeah, that does kind of take me back.
Yeah.
Did you have one?
No.
Fisher-Price made one. Did you have that one?
No.
Yeah. I didn't have either.
Yeah, you and I had similar upbringings. We didn't get the best toys.
No. But apparently, in the early 90s when digital cameras came out, they were like $1,000, but they could only store like 8 pictures at a time. Like,
yeah.
you could take 8 pictures, and then you had to plug it into your computer and upload those 8 pictures, format the disc, and then start over again.
Yeah, God bless you early adopters, but it usually pays, in my experience, to wait a little bit on the tech to figure itself out.
For sure.
Like the first flat screen TVs, remember how expensive those were?
Oh, my God. But it's the early adopters who drive the prices down because they are buying these things. You know what I mean?
Hey, I mean, they walk the righteous path.
So just to wrap it all up, Kodak ended up laying off 50,000 employees. And in 2012, they filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy, and they're still around, but they basically make printer cartridges and motion picture film stock.
Yeah, which is also not used very often anymore.
Nope. Poor Kodak.
Poor Kodak. Time for a break?
I was going to say the same thing, man. We are really simpatico this episode.
All right, we'll be right back.
I was going to say that too. All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on. Hey friends, if you've ever been in the market for a new home, you know home shopping can be a lot. There's so much you don't know and so much you need to know. Like, what are the neighborhoods like? What are the schools like? Who is the agent who knows the listing or neighborhood the best? And why can't all this information just be in one place?
Yeah, well, now it is, everybody, on Homes.com. They've got everything you need to know about the listing itself, but even better. They've got comprehensive neighborhood guides and detailed reports about local schools, and their agent directory helps you see the agent's current listings and sales history. Homes.com collaboration tools make it easier than ever to share all this information with your family.
It's a whole cul-de-sac of home shopping information all at your fingertips. Homes.com, we've done your homework.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business, evolving your passions. They push what technology can do so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com/welcome to now. Okay, Chuck. I'm going to pick one. And
The big wheel.
Okay. it landed on Western Union again, so we're going to have to go over that one all over again, okay?
Okay, all right.
So Western Union, no, we won't do that. Let me just move it one space to this JCPenney one. How about that?
Ooh, all right.
I like this one because it really kind of gets to the bottom of some tricks that clothing retailers use. Or actually, all retailers do, but some clothing retailers are particularly... guilty of it.
That's right. We are talking about the clothier JCPenney, which in 2012 hired a shiny new CEO named Ron Johnson, who had made quite the name for himself in business and retail as two things. First, the guy who hipped up Target.
Oh, okay.
Remember growing up, Target was like, whatever. Target was not, you know, it was kind of like a Kmart thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, Target was like this cool, hip, awesome place.
Mm-hmm.
It was because of Ron Johnson's efforts, largely.
Gotcha.
Then he went to work at Apple, and he is the guy, he was their VP of retail. He's the guy who basically oversaw, you could say, invented the Apple store and the Genius Bar and stuff like that.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, like, he was legit. JCPenney was like, come save us. Like, we're really flagging, like even compared to some of these other retailers that do the same thing, like TJ Maxx or Walmart or whatever, we're getting no love whatsoever. So Ron Johnson came in and looked around and he's like, this industry is shameful. Like basically what he'd walked into was an industry of clothing retailers that would sell items that were, say, a $10 item for $10. But on the price tag, it would say that it originally started out as like $50 or something, right?
Yeah, it's half off.
And yes, at one point they charged $50 for it, but it was so that they could later mark it down in a sale that probably took place the day after that thing arrived and was sold for $50. So that means there were some suckers out there who actually paid $50 for that $10 shirt. But the way that they got you was by not only marking it down, but having a reason to mark it down. They would have sale after sale after sale. Hundreds of sales, different sales in a year, and it still wasn't working. And Ron Johnson was like, this is desperate, and we shouldn't do this anymore.
Yeah. There were coupons even, and people, you know, Americans eat that stuff up. If you hear half off blowout sale this weekend,
mm-hmm.
your mouth starts watering a little bit, and you think, wait a minute, I can get something that should cost twice as much for half as much. or I can bring in this coupon and get two things for one thing. It's unbelievable. And we still fall for these tricks. We all do. So he said, no, here's what we'll do. We're going to just basically out ourselves and say, you know, now what we're going to do is called Fair and Square Every Day. Yep. Is our new pricing system. It means you don't need a sale. You don't need a coupon. Our stuff is just going to be inexpensive all the time. And people hated it. Right away, people started complaining. They love their sales. They love their deals. He would call them on the phone personally. He wouldn't do that. And say, you dummy, don't you understand? You're paying the same price. It's just cheap all the time now. People didn't understand that. They didn't want to hear that. Mm-hmm. I saw one person that said that he seemed to almost have a disdain for his customer base because he, behind closed doors, were saying they're dumb and they need to be educated. And like, how can these dum-dums not understand that cheaper clothes every day is a better situation?
Yeah, because the studies have found that people will pay more for a cheaper thing if they think it's more valuable than they would pay for the same thing if it were marked. They would pass up something that was actually the same thing at a lower price.
Yeah.
And the reason why is because a $10 shirt seems cheap and maybe cheaply made and probably just not a good shirt. But a $50 shirt that you can buy for $10 was valuable to begin with. And then, yes, not only is it a deal, you could make the case that it's a steal. And people love that. Like you said, there's a vein of America that is crazy for that kind of stuff. And Ron Johnson found out the hard way that when you go up against that vein of Americans, you lose every time. And he lost pretty big in 17 months.
Yeah, I got two words for you, my friend. Outlet mall.
Yeah.
That really says it all about America.
Yeah, but if
I don't even know how they operate, but it's got to be something like this with outlet malls, right?
Very much. But also, there's a lot of them that are like crypto outlet malls. They're not or outlet stores. They're just regular stores in an outlet mall. It's BS. If you're a developer of an outlet mall and you're letting stores in there that are actually not selling their outlet stuff, but it's just a regular store, you're at fault. It's on your hands. Blood is on your hands.
So what this got Ron Johnson was what is known as the worst quarter in retail history, which was store-to-store 32% drop.
Wow.
Quarter over quarter. That's just a death knell for him. He only made it, I believe, 17 months. And that was it. And they came back in and said, hey, we're going to go back to our fake pricing scheme. And people loved it.
I'm sure Ron Johnson was like, that's all right. Thanks for the multi-million dollar golden parachute, everybody.
Yeah. Oh, man. He supposedly made like $400 or $500 million in Apple stock.
Oh, my God. So
he didn't even need this job.
No, I'm sure. He just wanted to show all those loser Americans what the deal was.
He still got a job. He's doing something else like 2 years after this. Like, why is this guy working? Go. Retire on your island or something.
So there's there was an ad that JCPenney came up with, like, that ran short run intentionally, but it basically pleaded for their customers to come back. They're like, we know we made mistakes. We're getting back to our roots. We love you. Please come back again. Like, they were begging their customers to come back. And apparently it worked. Because this is another common theme that we'll see, and I think this is a good segue into the new Coke debacle.
Ooh.
When you take away something that people love but have come to take for granted, they will not only fight for it, they'll come back for it in droves when you give it back to them.
New Coke, the end.
Pretty much, yeah.
So, of course, this has got to be in there. If you grew up in the 80s like we did, you remember a time where Pepsi threatened Coke a little bit, not literally, like Dr. Pepsi didn't come up to Mr. Coke's door and say, listen, I'm going to take you out back and behind the woodshed and take care of you.
Sure.
The company threatened Coke because their sales were doing pretty good. It was a different taste. I think it was a little sweeter. I don't even drink Pepsi, so I'm not really sure. But I think it had a sweeter taste. I don't know if they were winning the Coke wars, the Cola wars, but they were edging in on Coke's dominance.
It was that choice of a new generation campaign.
Yeah,
that was what had done it. They got Michael Jackson. They got Madonna.
Yeah.
They got, I think, Geraldine Ferraro did one of these commercials. Like,
that's advertising gold.
These were just internationally famous commercials. And so Pepsi had kind of come out of nowhere and was eating Coke's lunch all of a sudden.
Coke had Dukakis. That was a big mistake.
Yeah, Dan Quayle.
So Coke was a little worried. They saw the writing on the syrupy writing on the wall. And they said, all right, behind closed doors, let's start rejiggering our recipe here that had been around, you know, since it was, sold in that very first pharmacy. Very, very classic. That's a little hint of what's to come. Mm-hmm. Very classic taste. Mm-hmm. And for a couple of years, their engineers mixed up little batches. They did taste tests. They let people taste them. People were like, I like the taste of this better. And so in 1985, in April of 85, New Coke came out with a redesigned can. They kept their colors and stuff. And I'm not sure if did the font completely change or was it just sort of a modified version of the old script?
I think the new was slightly different, but the Coke was the original.
Okay. But at any rate, they unveiled New Coke, and it was not only a tremendous flop, but it caused a lot of anger and people hoarding their old Cokes. Mm-hmm. And people were just like, how can you change an American institution like this without even asking anybody, even though they had done testing?
They had done tons of testing, and the tests came back roundly in favor of this new formula for Coke. But Malcolm Gladwell, in his book Blink, apparently pointed out that if you're doing a taste test, you're not sitting there drinking a whole can. You're just taking a little sip of something and comparing it to a sip of something else. And so it's possible that New Coke really tasted terrible if you drank the whole can. It was too sweet. The explanations I saw were more that it was psychological. People didn't like messing with their beloved Coke, number one. And I saw that kind of wrapped up in a quote from somebody that they said the biggest mistake Coke made was telling the public about the change to the recipe. Because people were like, you can't mess with my stuff. I don't care what it tastes like. And of course, it's not going to possibly taste good because you're messing with my original Coke. So people just kind of turned on it from the outset.
Like they think they should have just changed the recipe and just left it and not said anything?
This guy was saying if you're going to change the recipe, they shouldn't have said anything. Because that happens from time to time. But then the bigger problem was that you kind of touched on, they didn't stop and ask their customers, do you want a new Coke? They just made a terrible business decision based on fear of Pepsi getting some of their market share all of a sudden. They went and completely rejiggered the formula. That was their response to that.
Yeah, and it didn't last long. It was less than 3 months later, New Coke was gone, and they added Classic, Coca-Cola Classic. Mm-hmm. And I remember, and I didn't even drink a lot of soda back then even, but I remember it being just almost like this nationwide relief setting in.
Yeah.
It was really a big deal, and it sounds so funny now if you're some kid who, you know, didn't live through this. It really, like, it was big, big news and sort of captured America's attention for a little while. Mm-hmm. And Coke Classic coming back was like an old, long-lost friend reappearing at the front door. And eventually, of course, the word classic was dropped, and they were just like, can we just forget about all of that, and we're just Coke forever?
But that lasted for a while. There was many years where you differentiated by saying Coke Classic, even after New Coke was long gone. You still referred to Coke as Coke Classic for a while, and then it finally went back to Coke.
Had to do it.
Is it time for another message break?
Sure.
Okay. Chuck said sure. Stuff you should know. All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on. Hey friends, if you've ever been in the market for a new home, you know home shopping can be a lot. There's so much you don't know and so much you need to know. Like, what are the neighborhoods like? What are the schools like? Who is the agent who knows the listing or neighborhood the best? And why can't all this information just be in one place?
Yeah, well, now it is, everybody, on Homes.com. They've got everything you need to know about the listing itself, but even better. They've got comprehensive neighborhood guides and detailed reports about local schools, and their agent directory helps you see the agent's current listings and sales history. Homes.com collaboration tools make it easier than ever to share all this information with your family.
It's a whole cul-de-sac of home shopping information all at your fingertips. Homes.com, we've done your homework.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business, evolving your passions. They push what technology can do, so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com/welcometonow. All right, Chuck. You're up. What's next? What are we going to do next?
Well, my amigo, we are going to go with the Blockbuster Video.
Oh, yeah. This is my favorite.
It's another, boy, the 80s was pretty rough on some companies that didn't see the writing on the wall, because Blockbuster, if you grew up in the 70s and 80s, well, you know, if you were a teenager, at least in the 80s by that time, mm-hmm. you spent a lot of time, we've talked about it before, browsing your early Friday evenings with your friends at Blockbuster Video, looking over those shelves, reading the back of those boxes, the backs of the boxes, and and standing by the door at that bin because you just could not get your copy of Excalibur, and some nerd walks up and dumps it through the slot, and he grabs it before it even hits that bin. And the employee says, "You're really not supposed to do that."
That was a great Blockbuster employee impression.
You do it anyway. And Blockbuster ruled the video market, except for, you know, the, which I still love, the charming mom and pops. I had a
this
family at our church even ran their own little video store. And that was a good business for a while. But Blockbuster eventually would gobble most of those up.
Yeah, to me, Blockbuster was a 90s thing. The 80s were mom and pop places where you'd actually rent the VCR when you also rented Beverly Hills Cop.
Yeah. Video Shack or Video House.
Like that. Yeah.
Video Barn.
And there's, just as an aside, I want to know if anybody out there knows what the name of this phenomenon is, but whenever I walked into a Blockbuster, that whole mental list of movies that I wanted to rent just vaporized.
Yeah, and I like the test taker syndrome.
It would be like I had just walked into a building for the first time, let alone like a Blockbuster Video. Like I had no idea what I was doing, totally in over my head. And I would invariably walk out with some movie that I just didn't really want to see, but I got to rent something. And I can't
Turner
remember.
And Hooch. Okay.
Yeah, pretty much. I spared myself that one, but yes, that's generally correct. So
then you get home and you're like, man, I went in there for Gleaming the Cube and I walk out with Turner and Hooch.
That's exactly right. That was kind of the wrap up of it, wasn't it? That you remember after you get back home. It's the worst, or it was the worst. It would be still the worst if Blockbuster were around, but it's not because of bad business decisions.
That's right. If you remember in the late 90s, there was a company called Netflix that said, hey, we're going to start mailing DVDs to people so you don't even have to go to the store. You can get on this thing called the internet and you can look up the movie you want and you can order that DVD to be shipped to your house and then you can just drop it in the mail afterward. We failed to mention, by the way, I didn't know this, Blockbuster was making about $500 million a year in late fees.
Man, they were unconscionable.
That was a big part of their business. But Netflix is like, and those late fees, like you can keep these things for a long time. And they would eventually say, but you know what? Maybe we should try and, I think it was a merger idea, right? And less of a sale.
What do you mean?
Or,
Oh, with Netflix?
Weren't they trying to merge with Blockbuster and say, hey, why don't you let us take over and start doing mailing stuff for you as well?
Yeah, that was the impression I had, that Netflix wanted to kind of slide in and become part of Blockbuster and help Blockbuster do its own thing. And Blockbuster said no twice, at least.
Yeah, for $50 million, by the way.
Yeah. And Netflix, by the way, is valued at about $200 billion today. So $50 million was pretty good price. And that's not just because Netflix was an unknown. Netflix had already shown that it was a proven success, but it hadn't been around long enough for Blockbuster to see the writing on the wall. They just thought, I think John Antioco, the CEO, considered not just Netflix niche, but the internet was still niche in 2000 to the CEO. So Netflix shrugged and went on their merry way, and Blockbuster just started to fall further and further and further behind.
Yeah, I was actually a member of the Blockbuster DVD mailing program when they finally got around to copying Netflix.
Really?
Yeah, I didn't jump on Netflix. I was like a Blockbuster loyalist. I was like, I'm going to use their thing because it's the same, basically.
Uh-huh.
And I think maybe eventually when Blockbuster stopped, I did jump to Netflix DVD. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure I did. But I mentioned in the first one of the first segments that there was a bit of serendipity, two bits of serendipity. That Excite finished their email program this month. Netflix this week just announced the shutdown of their DVD side.
I know. That's what prompted this episode.
Oh, I'm not falling for that again. 25 years of those DVD mailings, they just shut it down. They said you can send them back up until September 28th, and after that we're not going to ask, which basically means keep what you got.
Oh, yeah.
And not only that, but to liquidate their DVDs, they're selecting random customers and they're just sending them 10 DVDs.
Oh, wow.
And saying, like, here, have fun. Apparently 0.5% of their revenue these days. And just quickly to go over their monies.
Mm-hmm.
Netflix is a rough company to be invested in, I think. I don't know much about this stuff, but they, in November 21, they peaked at about $302
billion.
Mm-hmm. The next summer, they crashed all the way down to like 80-something billion
mm-hmm.
From 300. And then now we're back up at like 180.
Yeah, I think that was when they basically doubled their streaming fee, their monthly fee to stream. Everybody was like, forget you. And then people have come back.
All right.
So you were saying that Netflix was giving away their DVDs because they knew they didn't need them. Right. Great. That's such a wonderful thing to do. Blockbuster did the opposite of that. And I saw that it was very famously described as failing at failing. Because as it was clear that Blockbuster was doomed, and it was clear for years before the last Blockbuster closed, rather than basically pumping all the money out to shareholders, which apparently is what a sociopathic corporation is supposed to do, they brought a succession of CEOs in to try to save the place. And those CEOs just spent hand over fist money that they wasted on these schemes that did nothing but waste money for Blockbuster to try to resurrect the brand. And then finally, after I think bankruptcy in 2010, it was bought for a song. I don't even think it was a good song by Dish. And they're still Blockbuster now. Dish is one of their on-demand groups of channels. It's called Blockbuster at Home. So Blockbuster's still around, Chuck. If you're a Blockbuster loyalist, get yourself Dish and you can watch on-demand movies through Blockbuster at Home.
Amazing. Was it the song Escape? That's a bad song.
What song is that?
If you like, aka the Pina Colada song.
Oh, that song is not only bad, it's morally reprehensible.
It's awful, and I just pointed this out to a group of friends this last summer who liked it, including Emily.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, you've never listened to the words of this song?
Yeah.
She's like, well, not really. I know the chorus. I said, it's about a guy that wants to cheat on his wife so bad because he can't stand her that he puts a want ad to go find some new lady,
mm-hmm.
and he hits it off with her, and it turns out being his wife.
Yeah, and he's like, great, things are fixed.
Yeah, exactly.
Man.
Because in the 70s, that's all you needed. That and a little, a bottle of, Bacardi and some pills.
That's right. The 70s were great, but the people in the 70s were the worst.
All right, we got two more. Which one are you going to pick? I know which one you're going to pick.
You do not.
All right.
Yes, you do. Just go ahead and pick it for me. We have.
Well, you're probably going to say E.T.
That's right. And technically, we have three left if you want to go for it, but okay.
Do we have three?
Mm-hmm.
What else are we missing?
I can't say. It'll ruin the surprise.
Well, we agreed not to do that one, though. You want to do it again?
No. We didn't do the AOL Time Warner one.
Oh. Eh.
Okay, we'll skip that. There is one thing I wanted to say about that.
All right.
At the time, in 1999, AOL was worth $200 billion. And I was like, wow, that's a lot. How much is Apple worth these days? In 2023, Apple's worth $2.75 trillion.
Wow.
$1 trillion. That's how much that company is worth. More than $1 trillion. Almost $3 trillion, Chuck.
That's amazing.
And this is 24 years later. That's how gobsmackingly much, like, just money has increased by then, by now.
Crazy.
So I just wanted to point that out. It's just insane.
All right. Well, E.T., the movie.
Oh, one other thing. I want to go on record that we should do an episode on AOL and the beginning of the internet, because it is so interesting.
Oh. I mean, talking about Excite and AOL and...
Did it get you excited?
I remember the first time I heard the word Google. I literally remember that very first time.
Yeah. You remember it used to say, like, I'm feeling lucky?
It was a production manager named Kevin Edge. If anyone knows Kevin, tell Kevin I said hi. He, in a production office on a TV commercial in LA in the early 2000s, he said the word Google. And I went, what? And he went, it's a search engine. And I went, excuse me, Kevin. No, Kevin was great.
Did you say you mean a web portal?
E.T. colon, the extraterrestrial. Very popular movie, some might say. Some might say it's a classic. Some might say that they still love Reese's Pieces because of that classic movie.
Yes. So
I said Reese's Pieces, I think. But you know what I mean.
Yeah. To me, that might be the greatest mass-produced candy of all time.
Oh, what?
I love Reese's Pieces. I can eat them by the bucket full, unfortunately.
I love them, too.
But they've only been around since 1978. Did you know that?
Yeah. I mean, I remember when they came out, my friend.
Okay. I was not quite aware. I was 2 years old at the time. Give me a break. But I was seven.
I was Candy Central.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So, but yeah, by the time I was seven, I was like, give me these things.
Yeah.
But in 1978, when they came out, they actually did pretty good. Hershey's made them. And then they crested and peaked and then started to decline really quickly. And so Reese's Pieces appeared to have run their course. And people say quite reasonably that it's possible Reese's Pieces wouldn't be around anymore were it not for E.T. eating Reese's Pieces on screen. And the irony of the whole thing is that it was originally supposed to be M&M's, and M&M's wouldn't bite. They said, we don't know what this E.T. thing is. We're not going to give you a dollar for it.
E.T. was based on a book?
There's either, I saw somebody describe it as a novelization, so it's possible that they made a book version of it?
Yeah, that's what it was.
Okay, well, in that, apparently in the original novel that was made from the movie, it's M&M's that E.T. eats, not Reese's Pieces.
Oh, okay. That's a nice little nugget. I read the novelization of Raiders of the Lost Ark.
How was it?
It was great.
Did it differ from the movie at all, or was it just basically the movie in book form?
It is the movie in book form, but there's novelizations. I read a couple of them back then. They're always a little bit different. They had extra details because it's a book, and it was kind of fun. I'm sure they still do that, don't they?
I think so, maybe? Probably. I'm sure they've Marvel does. If you can make a dime off of it, Marvel does.
Yeah, that's a good point. So depending on who you talk to, there are different stories. I think this is one of those things where when something works out so well, everybody you interview later on was like, it was really kind of my idea. Because Steven Spielberg I saw the interview. The words came out of his mouth that he said, you know, my favorite candy was M&M's. And so I thought when M&M's passed, I thought, well, what's my second favorite candy? It's Reese's Pieces. I saw other things say it was one of Spielberg's kids say that was his favorite. I saw others that said there was this guy named Steve Adler, who was the vice president of merchandising for a company called MCA, the Merchandising Corporation of America, which was a subsidiary of Universal, and it was kind of like the early days of movie merchandising period. Like Star Wars kind of busted it wide open a few years before.
Oh yeah.
So this is sort of a newish thing in like brand placement and getting money for that kind of thing. So Steve Adler was a merchandising VP at MCA, and he says that it was his kid who said, "I love Reese's Pieces."
And that kid was me.
Exactly.
So that's how it ended up. Like Hershey said no, or M&M Mars said no, we're not gonna spend $1 million. That was the deal. Universal said, this alien that everybody's gonna love, we're just sure of it, is going to eat either M&M's or Reese's Pieces. It comes down to who wants to pay $1 million in advertising, like spend $1 million in marketing in return for basically being part of the ET marketing blitz.
Mm-hmm.
Who wants to do that? And M&M said, no, we're not going to do that. And Reese's said, let's give this a try. There was a guy named Jack Dowd, who was a business development VP, who was basically the person who decided to take that risk and spend $1 million, which at the time, that was a lot of money. We're talking about 1980, 81, 82 dollars. So it's worth like $2.5 million today, at least. And this is where the hindsight is 2020 thing kicks in. Like, they didn't see a script. Nobody knew what ET was. Aliens up to that point were not lovable or huggable. They were creepy and weird. So this really was a risk that Jack Dowd took, and he can take a victory lap for making that decision.
Yeah, and ET is, you know, the rest is history, as they say, because ET is now a top 30 all-time grocer domestically for the United States.
He's a greengrocer.
I went down the Box Office Mojo rabbit hole out of curiosity, because it's just littered with Avatars and mm-hmm. Avengers and stuff like that. Yeah. And E.T., if you kind of dig in, it is the number two all-time movie that is not a franchise movie.
Nice.
So not bad, second only to Titanic.
Oh, okay.
And guess what? Barbie is already at number 15 all-time.
I know, that's pretty great.
Isn't that amazing?
Oh, I finally saw Oppenheimer, too. My God, that's a good movie.
Yeah. How are your ears?
They're fine. I saw it in like RBX or RPX or DMX or something like that, where like it shakes the seats and everything. I'm like, this is unnecessary.
It's loud.
Yeah.
Also, just for you movie trivia buffs, if someone asks you a trivia question about non-franchise box office, Titanic, then E.T., and the number three all-time movie non-franchise,
Little Orphan Annie.
Passion of the Christ.
What?
Yeah.
Wow.
It's a big movie. It's like 300 and something million bucks.
But that's considering it even was boycotted by lots of churches around the world, and it still made that money.
Well, that may be why.
No publicity. No, there's no such thing as bad publicity.
That's right.
The swings you don't take are the ones that you miss the most.
All right, let's finish up here with a little quick, we'll go through this quickly. Monday Night Football. Set the TV landscape for you in the 1960s. There were three main networks, NBC, CBS, and ABC. ABC was in last place. There was also a fledgling network from Howard Hughes, which I didn't realize, called Hughes Sports Network.
Yeah, that was ahead of its time.
Very much ahead of its time. And even though they showed like bowling and stuff. But at one point, the National Football League decided, you know what? Pete Rozelle was a commissioner back then, very forward-thinking guy. He said, I think we should have a prime-time football game. How about Friday night? And they said, no, that'll mess up high school football. And he said, Saturday night. And they said, no, there's actually a law against that because of college football.
I forgot about that.
So he said, all right, we already play on Sunday. He said, how about Monday night? And they said, no one's going to care. They played the first Monday night game in 1964, but it was not televised. Mm-hmm. And then they had, I think, CBS and NBC had, because CBS had the NFL, NBC had the AFL before the merger in 1970. And they each tried their hand at Monday night games, a couple each during 67 through 69. But none of those were televised. And they finally got together and said, these things need to be on TV.
Yeah. So they started putting them on TV. And apparently one of the reasons why is because you said, you know, some of those Monday night games, the early ones, weren't televised, but people still went to them. They turned out like aces. So it was very obvious that there was a market for this. So putting it on TV wasn't, it was not a no-brainer. It was still very risky, but there was reason to think it might take off. So I think CBS and NBC, since they already had a relationship with the NFL, they got first refusal from Pete Rozelle.
Yeah.
And NBC said, well, that would mean we're preempting Carson, and apparently we're too afraid to even bring it up. So no, we're passing on that.
No, Carson will have you killed.
CBS said, are you crazy? We're getting great ratings with the Doris Day Show and Laughing. Yeah. We can't get rid of those for some football game. And ABC just was like, you know that nerdy kid in class that has their hand up so high it's about to be dislocated from their shoulder and they're just wiggling right in their seat? That's what ABC was doing. And finally, Pete Rozelle is like, yes, ABC, you can have it.
That's right. And, you know, it turned out to be a very big deal. There was a guy named Rune Arledge there that kind of spearheaded this project for ABC Sports. Flashier graphics, more cameras, more camera angles and slow-mo and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Like using all this sort of newer technology more than they had before.
You have to say slow-mo.
And the biggest change, man, if you could hold that for the next 3 minutes. The biggest change was they all of a sudden had a three-person broadcasting team, which had never been done. Mm-hmm. It was always just a color commentator and a play-by-play person. Mm-hmm. But in this case, they had the play-by-play guy in Keith Jackson, only there for 1 year, then replaced by Frank Gifford. And then Dandy Don Meredith was the color guy.
Yeah.
He was an actor, former Cowboys QB, handsome, just great in the color position. And then
Howard Cosell. Well, explain to people who don't know what you're talking about, what the color position is.
Oh, well, the play-by-play is the person that goes, and then he takes the ball on the 4-yard line and cuts it outside and runs it down to the 3, tackled hard by number 85. And then the color guy comes in and says, I got to tell you, man, the way they're playing tonight, it looks like they're pretty inspired. I don't know if the cheerleaders are getting them all pumped up or what.
Oh, that's great. Okay, then who was Cosell?
Well, Cosell was Cosell. He was, we should do a full podcast on him. The guy is a legend, an amazing broadcaster. Mm-hmm. Was fired in disgrace at one point, but quite a story. But Cosell was just, he was sort of acerbic, and he would make fun of players and people and teams. And
oh, he was the Dennis sort of Miller caustic of his time.
Cosell's so much better.
I know.
But, Cosell was very famous for sort of verbally sparring with Ali and going toe-to-toe with Ali in interviews and just a great broadcaster while he was doing his job. And he was the third sort of wild card, and he and Don Meredith would go at it. And when Gifford came in, that was really a solid team, and it was a huge hit. I think it's still one of the highest rated TV series, period, on television.
Yes, and it's one of the longest running too. Although it started in 1970, right?
Did we even say what day it was?
It was, it was a Monday in 1970.
It was the Browns Jets, and the Browns won 31-21. I know that.
And it's been going ever since then. So this thing's been on for 53 years, but it's a baby compared to some of the longest running TV shows in America. General Hospital started in 1936. Guiding Light came the year after. Sesame Street's been on even longer. So it's old, but there's older, just FYI.
Yeah, for sure. And it bears pointing out the reason they went with the Jets was because the guy from ABC was like, we have to get Joe Namath on TV for this first game, because Joe Namath was a huge football star with the AFL, and then when they merged in the NFL, and just a huge presence. He was a sex symbol. And
he's on the Brady Bunch.
It was like he and Burt Reynolds were like the two hot guys of the moment, and they had to get Namath in there, so that's why they went with the Jets.
Smart. Well, you got anything else?
I got nothing else.
Well, that's our episode on Monday Night Football, everybody. So if you want to know more about all this stuff, we would say head on over to How Stuff Works. You can read the mystery one we left out. And by the way, this was written by our very own Dave Ruse. So hats off to Ruse for that. Thank you.
We just have to email Dave separately and make fun of him for calling Reese's Pieces peanut butter and chocolate candies.
Yeah. That was
or not.
That was written by somebody who's clearly never had Reese's Pieces.
I mean, technically, you may can say that candy shell is chocolate?
Nope, not at all.
No?
There's not a drop of chocolate in Reese's Pieces.
Well, I don't mean the ingredients, but Isn't it known as a chocolate shell?
No, it's a candy-coated peanut butter candy, peanut butter confection.
What about M&M's? Is that a chocolate shell?
Yeah, totally. No, it's a candy-coated chocolate inside, and then sometimes there's an additional inner nugget of peanut or God knows what now, but originally
they got all kinds of stuff.
It was candy-coated chocolate. This is a candy-coated peanut butter candy.
I mean, I know what it is. I just didn't know if that was the thinnest approximation of chocolate.
Nope.
All right.
Well, I think we already kind of kicked it over to House of Forks, so that means, of course, everybody, it's time for listener mail.
Hey, guys. Love, 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 love the show. Started listening when I was working my very first job after graduation during the pandemic. Spotify kept prompting me to try to listen to Stuff You Should Know, and I thought the title was condescending at first.
Oh, no.
I truly thought the podcast would be telling me about the stuff I already should know at this point in my life. Like, here's how to fold laundry or here's how to do your taxes. The joke's on me, though, because I think one of the first episodes I listened to was about Satanism.
Why don't you know about that already?
Exactly. At this point, wherever I started to get into something, I'd do a quick search on the podcast first to see if you've covered it before checking out Google. You two are great teachers to make every single topic a hoot. So imagine my dismay when I started getting back into sailing and I saw you haven't even skimmed the surface. I think you should look into sailing, guys, because it's really interesting. Sneak preview, the wind is technically pulling, not pushing your boat.
Yeah, Buckminster Fuller said the wind sucks instead of blows.
See, he can't teach you anything. You know that stuff already.
Yumi taught me that, so I got to hat tip her.
Yeah, well, and he taught her, and he taught us all about the geodesic dome.
That's right. And synergy, Chuck.
That's right. Ooh. All right, that's from Sam. And Sam, sailing reeks to me of one of those that we would flail a bit at and just get crushed by sailing enthusiasts.
Yes.
But maybe we'll do it anyway.
Well, yeah, why spare sailors? We've done it to chess players, European football players, everybody.
Soccer, surfers.
Right. If you want to get in touch with us like Sam did and suggest some topic that you know about that you'd like us to ruin for you, you can send it in an email to stuffpodcast@iheartradio.com.
Stuff You Should Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. But you know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line, thanks to Visible. It's true. So switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com.
Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com.
Life in our modern age comes at you pretty fast, which makes our time away especially valuable. When I take time to relax, I like to get far from my everyday life, immerse myself in natural beauty, and have unique experiences. But you don't have to leave the U.S. to experience tropical rainforests and islands filled with adventure, warm culture, and national treasures. Visit Puerto Rico, an island with a vibrant spirit that will sweep you away. Because when you visit, you don't become part of the island, it becomes part of you. In Puerto Rico, you can forget where you came from and embrace where you are. Puerto Rico, where visits end, but stories last forever. No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
Hey, everybody. I want to talk to you for a second here about Canva, specifically Canva presentations that are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, marketing, HR, ops, and more, Canva presentations can generate any deck you want for work. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it. Any department can save time on any presentation. So start designing today at canva.com. Design for work. Just go to Canva, C-A-N-V-A.com.